got a wonky contact. There's no way to start the day.
Yeah, tough start.
This is just off-putting. It's flying around my eyeball. And this stupid headphone jack that Fabro gave me that half works. All right, let's settle in. To me, this is, this is the darkest day of the year.
The Monday hangover day, basketball hangover?
Yeah. I hate this day so much. 4 days of gambling every single which way on March Madness and gluing myself to the TV as much as possible, only to essentially be interrupted by a couple social functions, which I also tried to orient March Madness around, and some Leafs games. By the way, I got to tell you, trying to watch the Leafs last night, going from high intensity, pressure filled, college kids laying it all on the line, seniors crying, loose balls, guys diving,
guys you never heard of,
guys knocking down the clutchest shot to their career, to Leafs Hurricanes Sunday game where the Leafs go, yeah, we'll try, kinda. That's got to be one of the hardest. That's about as difficult a transition as you can make. That's like if you scuba dive and you rise too fast, you die. you gotta go down the proper way. You gotta decompress. Otherwise, you're just done. You get the bends, and that was me yesterday. I had the sports bends trying to watch the Leafs going, keep your eyes open, keep your eyes open. This is your job. Watch this game, please. Because March Madness delivered yet again. Chalky
real
start.
Chalky, I know.
Chalky start. We got Gölkey. We got our moment with Oakland. Gölkey had his moment.
That was electric.
It was electric. It was incredible.
Everybody was bonded by that.
Him and his big Easter Island egg head.
Yeah, and he looks like he's like 30. He looks like he's younger than me. I'm 35. He looks like he's in his mid-30s. It's amazing. No.
Yeah, it's truly, it's great.
And those shots were hard.
He's the oldest player in NCAA history since Drew Timmy. Drew Timmy, who, I swear.
Had like a gray mustache.
I watched Drew Timmy from 17 to 32. I'm positive. It felt weird to watch the tournament without Drew Timmy and go, where is he? Is he hurt? So he's got an injury? Get out there, Timmy. The team needs you. Actually, they don't need you. Gonzaga looks good. I will say that. Our boy Daniele took a beating. Spent all year long watching March Madness, and then we were like, hey, what are your teams? He's like, McNeese. They lost by 30. He's like, Gonzaga stinks. They look like the best team in the tournament. We was like, the Kentucky kid. We're like, okay, we're going to watch him. He's going to be the draft prospect. He was like the worst guy I've ever seen. I went, this guy, he looks like me out there. That's exactly what I look like if I was playing college basketball. Just a short white guy who can't make any plays and can't hit any shots.
The McNeese thing was funny because
everyone was on it. I knew it was danger.
So I went to work and I was talking at my other job and I was talking to buddies about like, oh yeah, McNeese. I got a hot tip on McNeese.
And everyone was like McNeese.
Well, no. And someone was like, did you see their schedule of who they played? One of their wins came against the Mississippi women. University for women.
Yeah. Apparently men do go to that school.
Yeah. This is like their first year of us. But it was like, it's like the College of Biblical Studies. Yeah. They absolutely housed the College of Biblical Studies. We should have been aware of what was going on.
Really would have liked that before I laid heavy bets on McNeese. Here's the thing though. I laid those heavy bets on McNeese and I had them two different ways. And I looked at that and it was one of those, the second the game started, I went, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I just bet on a school that I've never heard of before against the team that makes the Sweet 16 every year.
Every single year.
It was the same. The only good news was I sniffed out the James Madison Duke thing. Called my brother early in the morning and I went, hey, everybody's on James Madison. If the world is on James Madison, the crap team, you got to go with the Duke Blue Devils. Hey, guess what? Have you ever heard of the Dukes or have you heard of Duke? Which one of these two teams have you heard of? Also, I think a big gambling mistake that people make, and I made a little bit of it yesterday, and a hand up. Trying to learn every single year. You try to learn every single year. There's no such thing as positive regression when it comes to favorites. Uh-huh. Everyone went into Sunday going, well, all the favorites won on Saturday. And so we got to zag back to the dogs. And I did the same thing. I went, oh, well, Utah State clearly has to be. Bang, they got absolutely murdered. Actually, the only game that I really loved out of the favorites was Baylor, and I got smoked on that. Mm. I went, oh, Baylor, Clemson, they were the underseeded team that just kind of came out and smoked the Lobos. And then now they're going to have this regression. No. Baylor gets whooped. It was just an incredible couple of days.
That was great.
God, I love the tournament. Who's your guys' favorite team so far? Like, who's the team that you've enjoyed watching? Armin?
I liked Oakland one.
Well, you're out. You're asleep. You didn't watch any of the tournament.
I've liked Illinois. Like, I didn't really know anything about them going in. Granted, Illinois housed a couple teams, but that, like, Terrence Shannon kid looks really good. I know nothing about him, but he's been awesome. And then I looked at his game log, like, all through it, like, leading into the tournament, and it's just like buckets. So yeah, they've two teams they've played, and they've looked awesome.
Yeah. I love Marquette. Like, I am deeply in love with Marquette. And I will say this, it's just, this is going to be a Big East love fest because, Matt Hayes and the UConn fans.
Yeah. Big East is like 6-0, I think it says in the tournament. They're crushing.
Clearly the best conference this year. And I like that the basketball conference is dominant, but that UConn team, I just don't know how anybody.
Yeah, they look really good.
I'm really regretting not playing a heavy future. The future on them was stupid though. It was something like +350 for them to win, and I went, well, you can't bet this.
It's been fun to see like Edie look.
That's nice too.
I mean, after last year, which obviously like was just horrendous, it's been funny to be like, oh, this is like what this version looks like, where like you can't do anything. you can't do anything against this giant man.
Yeah. I got to say, though, there is something about when you're watching the tournament and there's the freak guy Edie, where it just feels unfair. And you're like, yeah. yeah. Like
the Taco Fall effect.
No, yeah, but it's just kind of. It's kind of hard to root for.
No, I hear you. Yeah.
You know,
at least you've got the K and Con thing.
That's what I'm saying. It's you can easily root for Nembhard, right? On Gonzaga. You can go, yes, go Nembhard.
Yeah.
Edie, he's
our guy.
It feels
like you're cheering for Goliath and David versus
exactly.
Goliath.
You're watching the tournament. It's meant for upsets. And Purdue is a one seed. And then you just look at him and they're trying to box him out and he's just tipping balls over the top. And you're like, yeah, I guess anybody could do that. I guess there's. It's like a dad beating his son in one-on-one. You go, yeah, you better beat him. You better beat him. How did you guys lose last year? The one seed? Unbelievable. My favorite thing about March Madness, though, my yearly true tradition is being in group chats, being in gambling group chats, and the highs of the highs when you pick the picks.
Oh, yeah.
But then when you start to go on a cold run, everybody turning on each other. Everybody taking shots at one another only to have somewhere in there mixed in, okay guys, positive vibes, let's get back on the train, and then everyone tries to do the little rally and then you lose again and it's good pick and it's all these shots and everybody's taking shots at everybody's bets and then people are trying to remind of the good picks that they gave and you're going, what are these things based off of? I love it. God, March Madness is so good.
It's the best. It is the best.
The thing is I'm so torn. I don't want them to screw with the tournament at all, right? Like, I'm a traditionalist. I even don't really
like the first four.
Who watches it? Who cares?
Hate it.
Yeah, the only reason that I kind of cared this year was to watch Cody Williams, who, by the way, the NBA draft prospects. If you're a Raptors fan and you've paid even like a fraction of a second trying to watch the prospects, Raptors show, Sam Vecenie went on there, said that none of these guys would have been picked in the top seven of last year's draft. It's a nightmare class.
Just hope one of those Euros is good.
The Raptors are, that's it. You are hoping for an international lottery ticket if you're a Raptors fan, because these guys in this draft stink. You got Cody Williams, who looks like his body is 4 years away. He's new Bruno Caboclo, basically. They're like, look, his brother is a bigger, stronger version of him who's better, but maybe he'll be kind of like his brother. And you're like, the fourth guy on OKC? All right, I guess. That'd be all right. Lesser version of him. Then they're like, hey, here's these two Kentucky guys that are, if they stand on each other's shoulders, are the size of a real NBA player.
Cool. That was bad. The Kentucky one was so bad.
Yeah, they choked again.
Those two kids are awful.
Yeah, it just, whatever. I'm not a scout because, I would have taken the wrong guys every single year. Like, I've made this very public over and over and over again. But I remember watching Derek Williams going at Arizona. This is what the future of the NBA is.
Yeah.
And no, he's not. He was not it. But yeah, God, what a great tournament. Leafs weekend, they had two games that interrupted my March Madness watching. James Myrtle is the senior managing editor at The Athletic. Good morning, sir. Do you watch any March Madness? I feel like you don't even watch any at all. Like you're just a pure hockey guy.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah. I had a little bit of curling on the weekend, if you want to talk about that. So
you're a sick man. Honestly, I think that if you watch curling over March Madness, you should be put in prison. Like I would.
Canada was going for the world championship.
No, I don't care. Okay. Of what? Like there's like 85 world championships in curling.
No, the real one, like sure, the main one. They won.
Do you want to know what the
Rachel
real
Holman
one is?
Won the world championship.
The real one is called Olympics. That is the real one, okay? So all the rest of them, this is the real one. That's the real one. That's the one we tune in for. And actually, I love curling. I would curl, but curling is shockingly expensive to try to get into. And for someone like me who just wants to go and start and try, like I had this guy reach out to me from this one club and he went, oh, you know, you should come and join our club. After I started talking about it, I was like, oh, that actually sounds great. And he's like, it's $1 million. I was like, oh, cool. And you got to buy all your own stuff. Are you excited? I went, no, I'm going to be terrible at this for a while. I'd prefer it if it wasn't, you know, costing me every, like it's hockey. They're like, it's hockey.
Well, you got to keep the ice, right? You can just go play like a fun Bonspiel on the weekend. I mean, I've done that a couple of times. I'm not on a regular team, but
No, but I'm saying I'd actually like to try and play it regularly, but it's just, it's too hard to get into, too cost prohibitive, too much to going on. I'm like, oh, okay. No, it's too much. It's too much, too much, too much. I was actually watching a great clip of Brian Burke explain why he thinks hockey is the most difficult sport. And it's a great clip. And he's going over all the reasons why hockey is the toughest sport to play. But then it's actually also outlining why it's the most exclusive sport and why it's like all the guys in the NHL, for the most part, are upper middle class to wealthy. You go, right, you got to have money to get into this thing. Anyways, Leafs. Let's start with this. Just blanket statement. What was your biggest takeaway from the weekend? Because they had two games against two good teams. Well, maybe one and a half good teams.
It's kind of a weird weekend to take away from. I think you go into that weekend and you're like, you're probably going to lose one of these games. You just got to make sure you don't lose both of them. And they give you 40 minutes that are really impressive against Edmonton, like just wipe the floor with them. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the weekend was, you know, but I don't know how they can schedule a back-to-back on the road in Carolina the next night at 6:00. Like that's brutal. You're playing one of the best teams in the league. I mean, they probably didn't get to sleep until 3:30 in the morning the night before that game. So that's one of those ones where, you know, when you say schedule loss, it feels like a cop out, but like, how is that not a schedule loss? Like, I think they're just trying to grind out, maybe get a point on the road in that game, you know, if you can. So all that is to say, I think you have to feel okay about coming out of the weekend. I was actually looking back at the week since we last talked, and disappointing loss to Philly. You crush a not very good Washington team, play really well against Edmonton. I don't know. It kind of feels like a bit of a mixed bag. I'd probably give them like a C+, B- for the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a few things. One is teams would love to steal that for back-to-backs. The move that they had, the three goaltender move where you send the guy early and say, all right, we do have a crappy back-to-back and it is going to be difficult, but you go early. You have your beauty rest because Joe Woll looked amazing. And I went, oh, okay. Maybe we should study this. Maybe you just have the emergency backup in net, right? And you go, oh yeah, no, he couldn't make it to the rink. He's sick. But in actuality, the goaltender that's getting the next start is already waiting in the city. So I do think that
you're going to see teams carry three goalies. Like you know, there were four or five that did to start this year. I think it's going to start to happen more regularly. You just get a number three like Martin Jones who makes league minimum. And if you can fit that under the cap, then you just carry the three guys.
Yeah, that's been the problem in the past, right? Is the cap has been flat year over year. So the idea of using any salary cap, even a dollar on a third goaltender is nuts because everybody feels like, yeah, the move is that, I've said it for a decade, I've been on this take. I think I was on this take first that goalies would become running backs. And that's kind of where we're at. Is anybody with a rich goaltending contract, you go, are you kidding me? You wouldn't take one in the first round unless it's a special talent. And even then you're like, holy crap, you want to have two. You want to have two different guys. And yeah, you don't want to spend any money on them because you're terrified that once they turn a certain age that they're going to turn into pumpkins. And even then, it's like you don't know if you can rely on it consistently. But yeah, I think, okay, let's start with the goalies then because this is actually my thing. The way Woll played, Samsonov and Woll, I actually thought both played really well. Samsonov gives up some goals at the end of that game against Edmonton, and he leaves with an injury. So maybe that kind of makes their decision easy. But Wohl was unbelievable last night. He was incredible. To me, it's a no-brainer that you start him Tuesday. Where are you at with it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it sounds like Samsonov's not 100% anyway, so I don't think that there's going to be like a long deliberation on that one. So the question is, if Wohl plays really well on Tuesday against New Jersey, kind of how does the rest of the week play out? I mean, they don't have a really tough schedule coming up in terms of the teams they're facing, so that's not really part of the equation. I think there's a Florida game next week.
Next week is Florida-Tampa, so no, they got those games. That's going to be an important week.
Right, but this week, I mean, you can kind of, you know, you're not worried about facing a juggernaut, and I guess you probably go Wohl for two of the games and Samsonov for one of them, assuming he's okay. And Sheldon Keefe basically said, you know, the 12 games left, they're going to split it in half, and I think very much so the game one playoff starter is up in the air, and these 12 games are going to weigh heavily into what happens there.
I think that it doesn't matter how will you play if the other guy outplays you in the next game. He gets the net. Like, that's the way you got to do it. I actually saw a little bit of the panel yesterday, and they talked about, you know, giving them the splits. I disagree. Like, I'm not into trying to split the net before the playoffs. I'm trying to give one goalie, whoever emerges and just continues to dominate, the net if they continue to do it. And the way that I saw Wolves' game was that was dominance. You're rolling them Tuesday, and then if he continues to look that way, I think that you're rolling them again Thursday. Like that's the way that I would like to see it. I'm not sure that's the way that they'll do it, but yeah, especially if Samsonov is a little banged up, good spot for Wohl to try to turn this and roll some momentum into a couple of games. Cause yeah, he did come back from the injury. I don't think that he looked 110% like himself, which is natural after missing that much time. But yeah, that was a really, really, really encouraging sign. Okay. Next thing that I took away from the weekend, is it time to put to bed the Hyman signing in terms of there's 4 years left, but the first three have been so good. The cap is going up. Is it over? Like, is this one of the great signings? Does it even matter what basically happens on the back end because of what you got on the front end? How do you view the Hyman signing now that he hits 50 goals and yeah, he gets one against Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Leafs lost that one the moment it happened, basically. Like, and the thing, too, is he was going to come for less.
Yeah.
You know, like the cap hit was going to be lower. I mean, it was going to be more years. But you know, really, the only concern I ever had with Hyman was just injury concern. You know, remember he had the knee problems and struggled in that playoff. And I wonder if that was some of the doubt that went into it. But it was so close to getting done. And I still never got a great answer for why it didn't get done. And you know, I remember getting the text and saying, yeah, he's going to Edmonton. It's like, wow, like where did this go wrong? Like he should have been a guy that played his whole career in Toronto. He really should have been. And I think that that's what he wanted to do. And, you know, I think that he probably looked at it and he saw the guys, you know, the core four guys just getting this huge money. And then they're fighting over hundreds of thousands of dollars and no movement clauses and stuff like that. And Edmonton really, you know, even without the eighth year, they put more money on the table. It's like, this team really, really wants me. So it's a tough one. It's the hometown guy who, and I don't think the Leafs could ever expect it to be a 50 goal guy, but his trajectory in Toronto was always getting better every year. And honestly, like I've been around the Leafs for 15 years. I don't think I've met a better person than Zach Hyman. Like it's just like, you don't get higher quality than that. So yeah.
No, that's the book on him, like from everyone, is unbelievable guy, unbelievable guy, unbelievable guy, unbelievable person. Yeah, he's, you look at it now with the cap hit of $5.5 million and you go, that is an unbelievable bargain for someone of his ilk. You look at what Toronto essentially replaced that cap number with, and granted, a lot of it had to do with the extra year, right? The length of the contract. People looked at the injuries and they said, oof. They looked at how much money the team already had tied up at forward. They said, oof, is this going to be a good investment for the team? So I kind of understand it. I think a lot of people looked at it that way. I do think there's a bit of revisionist history from people that there's some people that are going, well, no one said this. No one said this. I actually looked back at all my old tweets about Hyman, and every single one of them I had, this guy is a part of the core now. Like, he's a core player. I look back at some of the shows I did on Hyman, and I was advocating that you needed to re-sign him because that season, as his contract was coming up, he looked awesome, and it just felt as though they really needed him with the team. I will admit that when the contract first happened, I went, ooh, that's a long contract for Zach Hyman. I remember going over the history of players of what I thought his ilk were and how those free agency signings went. But yeah, he totally changed things. And that was going to be my follow-up question to you is, looking back on it, did you ever get an answer on what exactly happened? Because yeah, it did feel like a deal that fell apart on the goal line. And that will be the thing that someday, looking back, is going to be painful to Leaf fans. You know, I think it's going to enter the lore of, do you know the Leafs could have had Wayne Gretzky? Or did you know that the Leafs are about to trade for Vincent LeCavalier? You know, stuff like that where it's, or the Leafs almost could have had Chris Pronger if they would have thrown Alex Steen in a deal and then they end up trading him for Lee Stempniak anyway. It goes into that mix of whoopsies for this organized. Oh, Bobby Orr, he was in their backyard forever and they were like, go look at him. And it's like, who cares? Who is he? It's like, it's not that one. That's the worst one ever. But this goes into that class.
Yeah, no, it did come right down to the end. Cause I remember I was talking to the camp of, you know, is this getting done and how far apart is it? And then all of a sudden, like I said, I got the message and it's like, yeah, he's going to Edmonton. It's like, wow, like how did that happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that the Leafs brass was so worried about the cap and so worried about having another quote unquote overpay that they were really fighting to get the nickels down. And I don't know what the cap hit was, but it would have been under 5 for 8 years, you know, and like at most 5 at most, but you know, with that extra year, you know, and the rumors are that part of it was like the no trade, no movement language on it, which is like, I just can't imagine like not getting it done over that. Like it's a big time miss for sure.
Man, I'm really only doing this as a joke and I want to move on, but I can't remember a year where a general manager took as big of a beating as Kyle Dubas is taking. Like Hyman's out there scoring 50 goals. Carlson murdered the team's power play and just killed their cap situation and basically ended the era of Pittsburgh being a competitive hockey team. The group they fielded was awful again. He went and recycled all the same Leafs guys and it's not working out. He traded for his boy Bunting and got a return that is being mocked by every single person I've talked to in the Gensel trade. Toronto, he fumbled the bag trying to do the negotiation. He took the PR hit of trying to do the, like, I would never take another job, and then takes another job, and it's the one that he was rumored to be taking all along, and oof, the, you know, Tree Living has made a bunch of moves that have made this team competent and not look any different than any of the Dubas teams. It's just, it's not a good cycle. Anyways, all right, my last thing from takeaways from the weekend is that not Leaf-related. Is Edmonton good?
Honestly, I think they kind of are what their record is, and everyone keeps talking about them like, oh, they're the favorite or they're one of the favorites. It's like they're in ninth place. And, you know, like I know that part of that's the slow start and they've been red hot since then, but I think they're like a ninth place team. Like I think they could win the cup, but they've got holes.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to you guys, I think the other day, and you were saying they're kind of like the Leafs a little bit where, you know, like they've got, it's not an, I mean, they're playing Cody Ceci like regular minutes. I mean, we've seen that show. We know what that looks like. And, you know, they have a lot of guys on the back end who aren't great defensively and world-class forwards, but it's a hard way to win in the playoffs. You know, when the power play is such a big part of putting up the regular season record that you do, and you get into the playoffs and you're going to be playing games where there's going to be, you know, two power plays split between the two teams, you got to be really airtight 5-on-5, and that's Edmonton's issue. And I don't know, getting Ekholm last year was huge. Like they've been better defensively since adding him. I like the coaching change. I think Chris Knobloch's a fantastic coach, but are they going to get goaltending? Are they going to be able to lock games down when they've got guys like Nurse and CeCe out there, Bouchard? And it's such a big year for them too. I mean, that Draisaitl contract's winding down and then McDavid's not that far behind it. Ken Holland's deal's up. There's going to be a new regime change there. They got to be careful. Like, do they keep the window open here and do they keep those guys happy? And it's a, and the other thing too, is that Edmonton could get Vegas in the first round. You look at like how the West is shaping up and it looks like it's going to be a really tough road for them. And I think to answer your question, I think that they're a top 10 team, but I don't think they're a top 5 team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about it too, is that they're very similar Leafs. The difference is I don't believe in the Skinner thing. I don't think that you're going to see him be great through a bunch of rounds in the Stanley Cup playoffs and be able to steal you a series or steal you a bunch of games. And yeah, no one saw Aiden Hill coming, right? And there have been other goaltending stories that have happened in the NHL that people thought, oh, okay, this guy's not good enough, and then he turned out to be. But yeah, I don't feel like they're going to be able to get enough saves, and I don't think they're going to ever be able to do a good enough job protecting him. They're going to have to outscore their opponents in a meaningful pace throughout the playoffs for me to think that they're contenders still. It's tough. And all that savings that they make on Hyman, it feels completely offset by the Nurse contract. And I brought this up on Leafs Talk the other night.
Well, said, Jack Campbell contract too, ooh, right? Yeah, I mean, like, oof. They've got the Connor Brown contract. Yeah. Like, it's a bit of a mess there. Well, like,
Connor Brown only made like 1 point something though.
Yeah, no? But he had a bonus in his deal, which is like almost $3 million, which is, you know, all the overage is going to go into next year's cap. Oh, their God, cap, yeah, sheet next year is a total mess. So, like, if they had just a little bit cleaner cap situation,
yeah,
then they would be in a different situation. Like, if they could take that Campbell money and put that on another goalie or another defenseman or upgrade on CeCe, I mean, they'd be in a... I think their forward group looks pretty good. You know, you bring Henrique in there and it looks pretty solid, but I don't know if it's going to be enough. And
I have no idea the contract was structured that way. I'm just looking it up now.
It's a nightmare.
It's a minimum hit this year, but then next year rolls over into performance bonuses that they're 3.25. What are the performance bonuses? I don't see them. It's just 10 games
or something. No, yeah, that's the contract's a total nightmare. And the most bizarre thing is Connor Brown's agent is now the president of the Oilers.
Yeah.
And that deal got done. It's like, doesn't he still just have the one goal?
Yeah. No, I think he has two. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think he's a -8, two goals and 50-something games. Yeah, it's not what you want. And I'm actually a big Connor Brown fan. Like, he's, you know,
he's the best. But
when they first did that signing, I thought, ooh, what a steal. And I didn't, but I had no idea that there was that rollover of hitting you on the cap sheet next year. But you are a cap guy, and you are someone who knows what everybody makes essentially in the league. Is there a worse contract than the Darnell Nurse one?
Well, I mean, I think that Connor Brown one's up there.
No, but that's, but that's only Jack one Campbell. Year, right? That's only 1 year. Yeah, Jack Campbell one, he doesn't even play in the NHL, so that's probably a pretty fair one. Yeah,
Nurse, in the NHL. Nurse can play top 4 minutes, right? Like, he's overpaid, but, I mean, what's Nurse actually worth? Six and a half? You know, yeah. So he's overpaid by a couple million or whatever, but there's worse contracts than that for sure. I mean, you're testing me off the top of my head, but... Yeah.
You can take your time. You get back on this. This is a project for you, okay? Sorry, I should have texted this to you earlier. This is my bad. I'm owning the responsibility. Bad host. Bad host stuff, but I do want this answer from you, what you think are the worst contracts, because, yeah, all I could think of watching that game Saturday was, it's got to be Nurse, because there's not really, I'm not really sure what the special thing he's supposed to bring is. Like, what even, like, when you say $6 million, I'm going, yeah, I guess maybe with the cap going up, I haven't really figured out what guys are going to be worth, but I don't feel comfortable with him protecting a lead, and I don't want him out there for trying to get a goal. So, you know, what is it you say you do here? So, yeah, I don't even know if I would want him at that number that you put out there. Anyways, okay, next takeaway from the weekend for me. Everybody wondered about the blue line moves and did the Leafs do enough on the blue line, but Edmondson looks good, and I think the numbers are pretty good, and all of a sudden Liljegren is playing pretty great, especially by Liljegren standards. I don't know if he's going to stay on the power play, but yeah, what do you make of what we're seeing from the blue line since the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, Edmondson against, I was going to say Vancouver, Edmondson against the Oilers was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, he played almost half the game.
Yep.
And was just nasty and fantastic. And, you know, I think you look at it and it's like, why was Washington not barely playing this guy? Like, what's going on with the Capitals? Not a very good team. And they're playing him like 15, 16 minutes a night. Like, that's kind of the weird thing. And really, you know, you talk to people in Montreal, the biggest concern with Edmondson and the reason they traded him is just the injury concern. So if he's healthy and he can make it through a playoff grind of, you know, 20, 22 games on a run, as he's done multiple times, then you're good. And he's not that old. He's just had the back problems, which you got to worry about. I mean, he was never a great skater. He's not fast and he's gotten slower, but the things he does bring are, you can just see watching that Oilers game, the other team's going to hate him in a playoff series. And the Leafs don't have a lot of guys like that. I think you guys were talking about on the show, like, well, who's the last defenseman the Leafs have had like this? Like, just the nasty. And I was drawing a blank. I can't even think of who it would be.
Yeah. He's been awesome to me. And even though, like, I know you're saying he's not the fleetest of foot, but I actually think that he moves okay for a guy his size. Like, I expected watching him regularly that he was going to look extremely stiff, and I was going to go, oh, my God, him getting out caught in space. But he can recover, and he knows how to move the size. He's been great. I will say, I just Googled, you know, your site has NHL trade grades. Joel Edmondson is a potentially huge downgrade for Maple Leafs. That's a tough headline. that's not what that writer wanted to happen for the Joel Edmondson start so far. But yeah, I think that he does bring a different dynamic to their blue line, which is something that they've been searching for at a pretty limited cost. And yeah, I think that's kind of it, is if he's healthy and he's giving you this, you're pretty happy with it. The bigger one to me is, and I keep saying that playoffs will determine all of this, but oof, Liljegren is looking much better at the right time. That's huge for them, for a team that also we've belabored over and over doesn't have many guys who can break it out.
Yeah, I think that you need him. Yeah. That was part of the concern, I think, too, with bringing in Edmondson and Labushkin, is like, okay, does this mean that Liljegren's out? But I think you need Liljegren in the playoff lineup, you know, for good and bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, after the Edmonton game, I tweeted, Liljegren had 14 points in his last 16 games. Like, he's really dialed up. And that's not just all being on PP1. Like, there's been a lot of plays lately at even strength where Liljegren's created something and made something happen. And, you know, if Edmondson and Liljegren is your third pair, they're going to be fantastic. If they're your second pair, you can live with it. But the way the pairs are right now, I'm not really sure who's 1, 2, 3.
That was always it.
If you have Riley Labushkin and then McCabe Brody and then Edmondson Liljegren, I don't know which one's your shutdown pair. I don't know which one's your top pair. I don't know which one's your sheltered third pair. It's kind of like they all have pros and cons, basically. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how, if Keith sticks with those pairings, how he uses that group.
You know, so I weirdly think that what you're going to see is the pairings look that way. And then if it gets into the final couple minutes of protecting a lead, they're going to shuffle up the pairings and try to create their own shutdown lines. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so
yep.
For even strength, most of the game, they'll have it look this way. But I bet you they want to have Edmondson on the ice to be protecting leads late. They're going to treat him like a shutdown defenseman come playoff time. But there ain't no way in hell that Liljegren's going to be the guy on his right side. I bet you it's going to end up being Brody.
Well, and conversely, if they need a goal late, Edmondson's not going to be out there, right?
That's
so then you shuffle it up. And, you know, there's been some games lately where you get a Riley Liljegren pairing out there late in the game, and it's 6-on-5, and it's like, this actually looks pretty good. Like, it looks, you know, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That's probably what's going to happen, is that, you know, you sit Liljegren, and all of a sudden you're playing. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Brody. I mean, he's the huge wild card. You know, Keefe seems to think that they can rehabilitate him and, you know, sit him a little bit and get him back. But I don't know. I mean, I think you're probably, at this point, you're probably going to have to shelter him going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And then that means you're going to need Edmondson and Liljegren to really play some tough minutes.
Yeah, that's honestly one of the most backbreaking developments of their season is, hey, this guy, he may have actually just fallen off a cliff. Feels actually the same way. It's a little bit different, but, you know, I'm doing Jay's stuff later and feels like George Springer is a huge wild card to the Blue Jay season. Is there's all these numbers that project him getting worse and worse and worse, like every metric. It's not just, there's a lot of Blue Jays players that were kind of fluky bad last year, fluky unclutch last year. There's a lot more evidence to support that Springer at 34 got old. And I think Brody is 34 as well. But
34 this summer,
It's just same age, same kind of drop off. And there was that little glimmer of hope when he first went with Liljegren, he was playing his proper side, where we went, oh, maybe it was just a hand issue, like a, you know, what side he was playing on. And now that we've gotten a little bit more of a sample, you go, ooh, maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it's not that. I don't think McCabe did him any favors yesterday, being like, here, -1 to start the game by putting the puck out front. But yeah, it's going to be, I don't know what they do, like rest, more looks, but unlocking him into turning into a passable player is super important. Okay, last observation for the weekend from me. Marner's missed 7 games. Apparently he's progressing. Apparently he's skating. But how do you use him when he gets back? What do you do with the lines now when he gets back?
I mean, I can't imagine he's not going to be back with Matthews again. I mean, I just, that feels like for sure. but I don't know.
I guess who's the other guy on their line then?
Yeah, I know. So do you think you go Domi? I've been thinking about this. Like, both Domi and Marner are pass-first guys, so you just have... Does that matter? Does it matter when your center is Matthews and you want him taking all the shots? You know, is there too much sameness there with Domi and Marner? That would be the one. That's one question. And then the other question is, you want to continue to use Matthews and Marner in defensive zone situations and, mm-hmm. and shutdown situations. Can you do that with Domi on the left wing?
No, you can't. But here's the thing. Domi gets all this crap for being a bad defensive forward, and I'm sure that the underlying numbers are worse for him than they are for Nyes because of who he got to play with for the entire season. But I don't think I've ever seen Nyes get the puck out of his own end. Like, I'm not sure he's capable of it.
Well, he's not good either.
That's what I'm
he's
saying.
Not good. I mean, you're comparing two guys who aren't good defensively.
But that's what I mean is they've played Nyes on the left wing all year long, and I'm not trying to criticize him. I think he's going to end up being, you know, a good player. And we always had too much expectation for Matthew Nyes going into this year, right? Like, that was always going to be an actual Toronto thing. That is one thing we all do poorly with the market, from the media to the fan base, whatever, is we see the young guys and we get so excited and we project the best case scenario for them. But ultimately, like, Matthew Nyes probably could have used some seasoning with the Marlies and taken his time, and he gets thrown in the fire here. It was way too important a role. And we were looking at him in the playoffs last year going, you got to score big goals, man. You got to score big goals. He's like, I'm 20 and I just played college hockey. You know, maybe just give me a little bit of time.
Well, and he was a second round pick too. It's not like a top 10 guy, you know, that can step right in. So his development curve has been super promising, but he's still got a ways to go.
That's all I'm saying is I believe in Nyes. I think he's an important part of the future. I'm glad that they've never traded him but when it comes to a defensive forward, I don't think that's very strong. When it comes to D zone exits, I don't see a guy who is very strong at winning puck battles in his own end and getting the puck out, which is the main issue I have with Max Domi. I've seen Nyes take a lot of bad penalties in his own end. It's not a great role for him. I would try the Domi thing and then do kind of what we talked about with the blue line, which is you're protecting a lead. Yarncroc's up there, right? He's getting more minutes. You get an offensive zone faceoff, you try it. The difference, the thing about the pass first and the abundance of the same thing is Domi can actually rip the puck. Like, Marner doesn't have an incredible shot. He's got that one really good move that he's been able to score with all season long. But Domi can actually rip it. And so I think the messaging for him would be, hey, we want you to make plays. We want you to move the puck. But every once in a while, you gotta rip it a bit more. And if you start scoring some goals on this line, you can stay. And then you have a second line where it's Bertuzzi, Tavares, Nylander, and you kind of go from there. Because, that's it to me. That's kind of the way you run it. And then Yarncroc and Domi sort of flip at times, depending on what the situation is in the playoffs.
Yeah. So if you do that, then Kampf or Dewar is your...
Kampf.
Third line center. Yeah.
It's a problem. Yeah. You were right. They should have tried to get one other center at the deadline. Again, they had the issue without having the second round pick, which made it difficult because the guys went for that. I don't know if I would have wanted Henrique, especially for a first round pick. And I know they got more, but.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't have traded first round pick, but I think that there was probably a way to get a better upgrade at center. I mean, it sounds, there was so much talk about defense, but I think if you just brought in Edmondson and someone who could play third line center, I think that would make a lot of sense for what they needed. So, because it's potentially going to be a problem where they're just not able to generate any offense from their bottom six.
Yeah. You know what though? It's so funny because I feel like there are more guys than ever that could score them a big goal in the playoffs, right? Let's go through the list. I've already done this, but it's Domi, it's Yarncroc, right? It's Bertuzzi, and I'm talking outside the core four, obviously. I actually still believe Nyes could score them a big goal. I think that could absolutely happen. I would definitely put Bobby McMahon now in that mix. And yet now it feels like you have this abundance of wingers where you're going, well, who's getting what time? Like, even if you have a McMahon, Kampf, Yarncroc third line, right? Are those guys going to generate offense? Like, how are they going to figure that out? And if they would have just had another center that could play some passable offensive hockey, it would have given you a lot more versatility with what you could have done, because I think, to me, the actual ideal thing is to have Tavares with Yarncroc and Bobby McMahon, and then another line that was to have potentially Bertuzzi and Nylander on it, but a pivot who can do some things offensively without killing you defensively like Domi was when he was down the middle.
Well, God forbid, but imagine like a center goes down with an injury. Like I don't know what they're going to do. So they're thin there. And they've been thin there a while. Like they did for whatever reason, they've always had lots of wingers that can't play down the middle.
Yeah. You would, and I don't know why they didn't get a little bit more aggressive with trying some of those guys for a little longer, you know,
like
if you were going to try Domi down the middle and they started at the very beginning of the year was Nylander's going to earn his money down the middle. And then they did it for one preseason game. Or it's like, why can't you try Yarncroc at center? Like, he seems like he would have a decent skill set for trying that at least. And I don't think they ever have.
No, he played there a bit in Nashville, certainly when he was younger. He's not great on faceoffs. I know his numbers aren't great, but he's certainly good enough defensively that, I don't know, it makes some sense to me.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Those are my weekend thoughts. Anything else? Did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, it's all of a sudden it feels like the last 12 games are kind of interesting, right? With like, there's like uncertainty about everything. And, you know, like I wonder if they go back to Domi at center at some point or if they've completely moved. I like him better on the wing.
Same.
You know, and I think that you play him with talent and you can really see what he can do. Mm-hmm. But then again, if you put, a concern would be if you have Nyes, McMahon, Yarncroc, or whoever playing with Camp on the third line, you're nullifying their value as well. And it'd be harder for them to come up with that big goal that you're talking about.
Yeah. I said it on last week's show, but in hindsight, like everyone talks about the Klingberg deal. And yes, they got away with one because that was obviously their worst move of the offseason. But in a weird way, when they lost Ryan O'Reilly and they offered him more and he left, and then they kind of panicked because the center market wasn't deep and they gave Kampf that deal. It's not that he makes way too much. It's that he's just not a good fit with this team because you can get a doer to be your fourth line defensive center, right? And the drop off is not significantly different between doer and Kampf. Like, do you think there's any difference in those two players? Like, really? Like, not materially. I'm sure maybe
experience, size,
he's bigger.
And to correct you, Kampf does make too much money, like 2.4 on a long-term deal. Like, I don't even know if they're going to be able to trade that contract if they want to.
I feel like for a guy who's durable and can play that many games, and I just thought about stuff like what Danault got that 1 year, and I know, Danault's better, but I didn't feel like Kampf was some, like, ridiculous overpay. You can say he makes too much money, I agree with you, but I don't think that it was one where I'm like, oh my God, how are they ever... But the bigger thing is that he just kind of clogs up a spot and you don't really have anywhere to play him because you weren't going to put him on a fourth line with some of the guys they have. And he made too much money to be there. And then to have him on the third line, he's not competent enough offensively to play with any talent. And so you kind of lose something there. But
Kampf only has value when you use him on like a really, you get to like when he was playing with Mikheyev and Engvall and they were three guys who could skate, who were big. And it was just really,
That looked good.
Eat the defensive zone draws and play against other teams' good players and not give up anything. And they did that pretty well. But if you don't have a line built like that around Kampf, then all of a sudden, you're looking at it and it's like he's not giving you much more than Dewar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's bang on. James, thanks as always for the time, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, JD.
See you, pal. James Myrtle, senior managing editor at The Athletic. Let's take a quick break. Let's come back and... Yeah, I got to get in a few more March Madness thoughts before I do some Jays season preview. And, I'm talking Ohtani with Ennis later.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Ennis stuck around. He's going to do the full 10 o'clock hour. We're going to do some Jays season preview stuff. Also, I need to talk to you about Ohtani because I haven't actually had a chance to open up about Ohtani yet. Here was my only Ohtani take. Because I was off on Friday.
Well, don't waste it then.
No, I said on Thursday.
Okay.
I kind of went off air. First of all, I know, I'm going to save it for the next hour.
Yeah. I didn't know if I was allowed to talk during this segment.
No,
or if I'm just sitting here observing.
No, I brought you in. It's like
observation. This is how it's done,
I want to teach you a little couple of things.
I thought it was like take your kid to work day.
Yeah. Watch and learn.
All right.
Do you feel bad at all for mushing me? March Madness picks because I was red hot and then I brought you in on all my bets and we didn't win a bet for all of Friday night.
I'm sure you've seen the William H. Macy movie, Cooler.
Yeah, you were the
cooler. I do feel like quite often I am the cooler with you.
We did win a good bet at the Raptors game, though, that we both enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like, we did.
We middled.
Yeah, we middled.
We took the opposite side.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah, that was a great moment. So we did middle.
Oh, I'm definitely your mush. Now, I'm not saying I am everybody's mush, because I have a mush as well. And, like, this is not going to surprise you. My wife is my mush. Yeah. Like, I went to the casino on the cruise we were on. Like, after I had had the best casino experience the previous night where I was, like, by myself. I was like, hey, I'm just going to enjoy a solo casino trip. And I was, well overserved, but, like, the right amount. Yeah. And I went to the craps table. Everything was coming up. A high five. Yeah. And people, I was like, it's fun. Come see.
Yeah.
Not, like, didn't
it's
win.
Fun.
Like,
come see. Oh, famous last words.
Yeah. So she's my mush.
Yeah.
I'm open to the
mushing to me.
Yeah, I'm open to the idea that just like me specifically to you, I'm your mush. Because you were talking about how well you were doing after.
Yeah, you killed me. Yeah, and then I started doing. I did extremely well on the Saturday.
Yeah,
you left. I didn't.
I was just tailing you. Like I don't know. Like me just gambling on the same things that you were.
No, I know. On Friday,
that was enough.
We got murdered. On Friday, we got murdered.
Maybe if you had asked my opinion, maybe we could have gotten in another direction.
You had a lot of strong college basketball opinions.
Big takes. Purdue, good this year.
Yeah, Purdue, not huge choking dogs this year. Good for them. Yeah, they finally figured out.
Zach Edey, tall.
We should win with the huge monster that we have against 16 seeds. They beat some teams down. Okay, I wanted to do two quick things before we get into Jace here. Mm. One is, you know, we went to the Raptors game on Friday because we wanted to see Shea, and you were like, I want to see Shea drop 50, I want to see Shea drop 50, and like it didn't feel special, but I kind of, this is the crappy part about where the Raptors are at. It dawned on me sort of after, is that they're so non-competitive that even going to see another star is not all that enjoyable because it just feels like there are zero stakes. Like they are so rudderless, lost, and depleted that you can't even watch the other team and go, well, this guy's good because he's playing against G League players. Like, who cares?
It's embarrassing for the other team to care.
Yeah,
like
it's so
like,
bad.
Yeah, you know, we always used to joke about how the Leafs only, like, they start, once you get their attention, like, oh, they turn it on. But, like, they can't against every team. And, you know, there's the depth of talent is flatter in the NHL. But literally any other team in the NBA, even apparently the Wizards, I didn't see 1 second of that game, but they beat them, so I assume also the Wizards took them for granted. You can take the Raptors for granted and just cruise past them at your will.
Yeah.
If you decide, okay, now's the time we're going to win the game. Because, that was single-digit lead that the Thunder had on them in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And the Thunder like, oh, yeah, we actually kind of are required to win this game,
Here's
so we'll win by 20.
A little bit of trying, then we win. Yeah, just... And I'm not trying to just make it so depressing because I don't want to ignore them. They're a local team that I care about.
But this is as bad as it's ever
been. No, but the
been.
Worst part is, you know, Simon, what do you got? You said you pulled up a Jonathan Givony article about the draft. Like, Sam Vecenie was on the Raptors show. He's like, no one from last year would have gone, no one from this year would have gone top seven last year. Yeah. And it looks like they're going to end up keeping their pick this year, barring a miracle. Uh-huh. And you go, normally this would at least be a bit of a fun time for a Raptors fan because you would go, okay, I'm going to tune into March Madness and I'm going to see some of these college players and I'm going to try to pick a guy that I like, or I'm going to deep dive into my college basketball / international basketball highlights mix. And you know that literally at the very best, and people do the ultimate take right now from non-sports fan, but kind of sports fan, fringe guy, as they call on Friday Beers' website, is, well, Giannis was in the everyone said was bad. Giannis was in. Okay, so maybe. Okay, fine. Maybe you get a one in a million, a literally one time ever in a draft, came out of nowhere guy from an international program, or what's more likely is...
You get a bum.
Or you're really just hoping to get a rotation player. And that's not, when you're tanking this badly, no one has ever dreamt of, if we could just get a rotation guy. A
couple of rotation players on this team would probably help. But
yeah, you're right. But
you can reach for Zach Edey, maybe.
That's no. Yeah, God, if they could only get another Ochai Agbaji. If we could just have one more Agbaji on this team.
God, who was the guy that we were excited to see? Oh, God. There are so many players playing currently for the Raptors that I like have never heard of.
It was devastating seeing Liberty Freeman start when I went, this guy is genuinely like, he's not good.
And, no, it's a shame. No, and you're right to say that, like, yeah, there's joy, and I know you've taken particular joy in tanking seasons.
I don't mind tanking seasons. I'm totally down with tanking seasons.
I hate it, and I hate the way North American pro sports are set up.
Listen,
but, like,
I agree,
lean
but it is what it is. Yeah, sure, in an ideal world, I'd rather have relegation and all these different, like, that's great. We don't have that. We're never going to have that. We have what we have. And because of what we have, I'm okay with cheering for a tank.
Yeah.
Like I've said, it's
something to cheer for.
The Seahawks are in the middle ground again. I'm going to watch Sam Howell and Geno Smith next year, and probably some guard is going to get drafted 13 to them. Yeah. And I'm going to go, great, what a fun time for me. Rather than being in the mix for one of these quarterbacks and actually having optimism, same thing with the Raptors. It's like, keep your pick next year and have some optimism versus this year where you go, hoof, bleak, and reward is...
Yeah.
Bleak. Anyway, what was the Gavoni article?
Well, so the Gavoni, we were just talking about how, like, it was a rough first weekend for all of those freshmen who were supposed to go super high in the draft. And so Gavoni did, like, an updated mock draft, and now four of the first six picks are Euros, and I've heard of none of them. So
it takes one week of basketball to totally change the lottery.
Yeah.
So, that's great. I love that.
Terrible. Apparently, it's just terrible.
Get ready to learn YouTube, buddy, is what I have to say to Raptors fans who want to see
draft prep.
Who want to see the guys that they're hopefully drafting?
Zachary Risacker.
No, I'm
first overall.
Sure, yeah, Risacker.
I'm sorry.
Once you sacker, you got a Risacker.
I'm sorry. I like the Raptors already have their undersized guard.
Uh-huh.
If they take that Reed Shepherd kid, I'll never sleep again. Mm-hmm. Like, he's my height.
He's a small boy.
He's like, I think Armin and Reed Shepherd one on one. That's like
Armin's bodying him.
Yeah, like Daniele was talking about this guy. He's like, boy, you should see him. He's just late game crunches. Horrific.
He was so bad.
Like, I watched him. I was like, there is absolutely no way that this is the guy he's talking about. Horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, and then the Cody Williams kid.
Uh-huh.
Like, he had one nice basket that I went, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. The rest of it was he probably weighs 89 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Dillingham was bad. That other Kentucky kid was really bad.
Dillingham is, again, too small. Raptors already have an undersized guard. So two of the guys are undersized guards from Kentucky. They already got that. They already have their version of that. Mm-hmm. They can't have any more of that. It's horrendous. Like, it's a really, really tough spot to be.
Yeah. No, it's not what you want.
So, yeah, I think you're drafting Cody Williams, hopefully, and hope he puts on 15 pounds.
Or Mattis Buzelis.
Yeah, well, yeah, let's go, Buzelis. Yeah, I think I'm actually down for an international guy for the first time ever going, you know what, I don't even really know, maybe,
Who knows?
The mystery box could be anything.
Yeah, that's what I want is mystery box, because the what we know box is, I went, no, thank you, pass. All right, quick break, and let's do some Otani and Jay season preview. Okay. Yeah, I got to say, Benny and I went to a sports bar this weekend. I'm not going to say where, but I think it's dead to me now because of two things. One, they opened late on March Madness.
Yeah.
We called ahead and they were like, don't worry, we're going to open up. And then they didn't. Mm-hmm. And then they told us they were going to open at a certain time. And we actually had to wait outside.
Yeah, that was good. In the snow.
In the snow, nice. Yeah, as they opened up slowly.
Good stuff. What you want.
Then they couldn't get the TVs right for us the entire time.
No.
They were basically fighting it to put the games on that we wanted. It was wild.
Just defer the remote in that instance.
It was tough. I've always said the mark of a good sports bar is, can they just rip the channels around?
Well, and part...
This is a sports bar, too.
Yeah, well, okay, so it's confusing. And I guess, like, March Madness is a very unique instance in which there's a lot of flipping, like, in the moment that needs to take place.
Yeah.
But that there was some confusion about, oh, I tried to change this channel, and it changes this channel. I don't know. What? Like, this is the first time you've changed the channel on one of the boxes?
Also, I picked up our check.
Was it?
No.
I picked up some checks too.
No, but I bought our food and beers there.
Yeah.
Their tip options at this establishment.
Oh no.
Lowest one?
No.
Guess.
Well, I'm gonna 20.
Nope. Armin guessed 22. 25.
No. Oh my god.
Lowest.
So what?
25, 28, 35. I looked at it, and I looked at her that was serving me. I was like, I'll never be back here. And I had a friend actually invite me because it's kind of a trendy. And I went, I was like,
you had good things to say about that place.
Because I went there for one game and it was good. And I'm sure for some things it's fine when there's less going on. Oof. But yeah, I just.
At least our table was also felt like it was going to fall over.
Yeah, I was
going to
say the table's going to fall over. Everything was like wildly overpriced. And yeah, they couldn't figure out the remotes. They opened up late. Yeah, it's like good stuff. No, I'll never go back.
My Caesar was catch more me dead ice than liquid. But yeah.
Yeah, you'll never catch me dead in there again. So no, it's a nightmare.
$35. Eventually, 35. They want it to be like income tax.
$25.
Like, this is, you just accept it. It's like, this is.
I looked at it. I was like, yeah,
income
great.
Tax.
Yeah.
Tip, like, tip is income tax.
Anyway, that's where we're at. That's where we've gone with the world. people, bars, like mediocre bars with good branding saying, give us 25% for not getting the channels right and not putting on the games you want.
Did you give 25% or you did?
Yeah, I did.
Custom.
Of course, I banged it. Oh, no, I just banged it. I was like, no,
coward.
I'm getting here. Yeah, I did. I just got, well, I honestly just like was like, no, bang. Yeah, did it. And I was like, let's get out of here.
They got you.
Yeah. Meanwhile, one of the main TVs we're watching is a Women's March Madness blowout of the one South Carolina versus Presbyterian, one versus 16, 30-point blowout. We actually wanted to watch.
Points.
Yeah, it was. We were like, yeah, we want some women's games on. We got the main TV watching a 30-point blowout, and we're like, please, can we get this off? They're like, we got to leave it on. I was
equality
like, okay.
Quality is, yeah.
I was like, that's a tough one. It's no, it just, yeah, let's. This is about prioritizing the games that are close, not about men's versus women's. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all I got to say about that. I was very frustrating. Like, very, very. The customer is not always right anymore. That's out. The customer. Pandemic killed customers always right.
Yeah.
Pandemic brought in a wave of, if you're even moderately upset by any type of bar, you should go to jail. You're the worst person ever. Like,
at least you're out of your house. That's what the thought process is. Like, remember when you couldn't leave your house? Now you can. You should be happy that you can leave your house.
My God. All right. We did the Raptors. We did March Madness rushing.
Raptors, we did the
Raptors. Before we did Jays, before we do Jays. Okay, so apparently Ipe Mizuhara, who is the translator for... Shohei Ohtani said that he graduated from UC Riverside in 2007.
Didn't
university.
Happen.
Did not happen.
No. Didn't happen. Said he worked for the Red Sox. Yeah. He was Hideki Okajima's translator. During spring training, he was cut before spring training. The Red Sox said unequivocally he was never employed by us. Yeah, no, it's good stuff.
So this story, all I said, and what I teased in the last block, all I said on my Thursday show, because things were starting to come out, I was getting DM'd, everyone, they're like, oh my God, this is amazing, amazing. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of looking at it, reading it, going, okay, this is a pretty crazy story. But originally, my mind was more at what was going to happen between just Shohei and the interpreter in terms of, I was basically processing all the jokes. I hadn't put a deep thought into it. All I said was, this reeks of a story where it's going to end up being layer after layer. This isn't going to be a simple, hey, his interpreter was gambling millions of dollars and he stole all the money and everything's fine and he's in prison now and it's going away. So I'm taking the Occam's razor approach with this one, which, by the way, people always say is the simplest outcome is true, but it's not. It's the one with the fewest assumptions. Mm-hmm. So here's the assumptions we have to make if it's the first scenario. We have to assume that this guy robbed Shohei Ohtani, was making wire transfers under his name, was making bets under his name, was using his accounts, was getting bookies to take major bets on his salary, and he was hiding it all from his friend and living a lie. Or...
Hold on. I have another assumption that you missed there.
Yeah, what?
That this guy, who's like a liar, like one of the biggest liars in history, also, and is $4.5 million in debt and has inside information to baseball, never placed a bet on baseball.
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect one. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Or it's two friends who liked to wager, thought it was legal, and lost a lot together.
Yeah.
Hey, remember?
Which is honestly, so
they're us.
I talked about this a little bit earlier on our show, is that, like, obviously from, like, a morality standpoint, I think that's like a wave it away.
Uh-huh.
And also from both a legal and a league punishment standpoint, is also like a who cares, because it's always... The ringleaders, the people that well, the guy under federal investigation who is the bookie in this case that bears the brunt of the legal blame. And we actually have precedent for this in Major League Baseball. In 2015, there was a Marlins pitcher who was busted for making illegal bets, and it was a different landscape when it came to wagering on sports. Not on baseball, but was making illegal wagers, fine. No suspension. And that was before we were more accepting as a culture in North America of sports gambling. I mean, the worst part of this is going to be the cover-up, right? Like the way the last week has been handled. Yeah. and the way the agent has handled it.
Unless Shohei just finds a way to send his buddy to prison. And
I mean, for what? Yeah, he's like, you know what? I don't want to pay that fine. Yeah. So can you just serve like 10 years for me?
Quick 10.
This would be embarrassing for me. So like, can you like three square meals, like lots of exercise?
Yeah.
I'll come visit.
You're not going to go to like the worst prison. We'll get you a good jail. You'll go to jail. You won't go to prison. No, I'm with you. This is where I actually think this is going to get really interesting is sports gambling to me. I don't have obviously any problem with it. I view it as the same as alcohol. There are obviously risks. Yeah. Okay. But you're supposed to be an adult. You're supposed to play within your limit.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to chase bet. And if you have a problem with it, then you have to find a way to stop and seek help. And there are avenues for you to stop and seek help.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough, I would say, is that people always go like, people lose their livelihood or their life with these online sports gambling apps. It's like, actually, I know the behind the scenes. If they see erratic gambling problems or you're gambling behind your means, they're shutting you down. They shut you out. Mm-hmm. This isn't like, you know, you're sitting and leaving Las Vegas or whatever, putting all your, you're not William H. Macy, putting all your chips in the middle. And like, oh, I hope that this is going to work out. Mm-hmm. No, that's not how it operates with the sports gambling apps. I think that there are some question marks in terms of how much we're showing or how much is being out there into the culture as quickly as it is. I definitely think that there is some deleterious effects to younger people who are looking at it and seeing like, hey, this is totally the norm all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as for someone like me who, you know, I was also raised in it kind of as a kid with gambling, but
I think
was always responsible.
New to it.
Like, it's not perfect, right? You've got to figure some stuff out. I don't think that it is. But I also don't think it's like the scourge of society. And I think that it is fine. And I think ultimately it's like people are always going to take, you know, it's no different than any other form of capitalism, basically, is like what we have. And you're going to take the money where you can get it. But with this, if he's placing legal wagers, right, on other sports.
Mm-hmm. Which is allowed by Major League Baseball under their CBA.
Exactly. And you've got all these guys that are, you know, taking every single one of these leagues that's taking a ton of money from sports books. Are you really, like, how are you going to spin this in terms of it being fine or okay? Like, are you going to suspend him when...
No, I don't think... I think, if anything, the punishment comes from the way it's been handled post, like, the breaking of this news. But like I said, there's precedent for this not being a suspension. This isn't the Shane Pinto thing where...
Yeah.
Which is weird. Like, and that... there was no real follow-up and, you know, I guess we're talking about a runner being used for him or... Yeah, anyways.
Well, and I don't know if the Major League Baseball also has the same clauses of you're not allowed to bet on sites, right? Because that's the football one is. Yeah. Guys have played legal wagers. There was the Lions, right? They got busted a bunch last year because they had a couple of guys that put down bets, but they were at the facility, even though they were legal bets. It's just it's weird, complicated stuff.
You know, I forgot another assumption, by the way, if you're just going back to the reason why. That a guy who, according to records, was making less than $90,000 a year as
Shohei. No, I said he was taking major bets on a small salary.
Well, yeah, and that he took out $4.5 million in loans from friends and family, which is the claim. Maybe after like like the second $100,000, I'd be like, where is this going exactly?
That's where you'd be? I'd be at $5,000 going, okay, that's the limit.
Yeah,
my brother is getting more.
If we're just talking about perception, it's not a big deal. Can you also, like, if we're doing what's more likely, is it possible that a Japanese citizen playing in the United States and, you know, new-ish to North American culture looks, you know, watches TV and sees nothing but gambling ads, and then some guy says, hey, are you interested in gambling? He's like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Assuming that it's one of the 30-plus states that it's legal in, like, it all adds up to nothing truly untoward.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's the messaging. It's the handling. It's everything that's happened since this story started breaking that is curious.
For sure. But can I ask you one last question on it? But then we'll get to Jay's.
Sure.
Yeah, how do you think it's going to feel, though, if it comes out and Shohei's like, no, I really like to wager? Mm-hmm. Because it is... It's an odd thing to be getting into a world where the face of baseball, like a professional athlete, because we're used to, you know, stories about Michael Jordan going to a casino, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't the first time an athlete has gambled. I'd hate to break it to everybody. But it is strange to have, like, there's a bit of a strange feeling having the face of a sport publicly be a guy who likes to bet on sports and spend lots of money betting on sports.
Well, and especially a guy that's as protective of his image as he appears to be. Like, we just found out the name of the dog, right? Like, late in the free agency proceedings.
Did
he got married, right? Like, it was like, we got to find out after it was done, after they were, in fact, married. Do we know anything about the woman?
Like, who cares? I don't care.
No, I'm just, that's an example of why, of you know, his mentality like, about, you know, what we're allowed to know about him.
Okay.
It's not a lot.
But in like the public image stuff aside, though, do you think there's an added layer of awkwardness where it's like you have a face of a sport? Like, here's what I would say. Will the jokes ever go away of if he gives up a home run, right? He gets back to pitching.
The answer is no.
He gives up a home run and people are going, Ohtani has the over.
Yeah, no.
Ohtani strikes out in a big spot. Oh, Ohtani has the under. Like,
yeah. No matter what happens going forward, but though, that's done. That's forever. That's a part of the Ohtani thing forever now.
That's what I'm saying. That's the part of this that, I don't know how they reconcile.
Yeah, and I wonder if that impacts his play on the field. Like, if he is...
God, I hope so.
If he is... what is the reason that he doesn't want anyone to know about him? What is the reason why in Anaheim he didn't want... He never talked to the media,
right?
Yeah,
hates distractions.
Hates talking to the media. Yeah. Only talked... When
Who's his interpreter
forced,
today, by the way?
They should have him. A secondary guy, or like maybe it was a backup guy, break glass in case of emergency.
Yeah, the backup guy is like sweating. They're like, do you also play sweating? He's like, yeah, actually, I'm the new gambling guy. I got an app with the wages in.
Yeah.
He went to UC Riverside as well. Like, they're like,
this is the real guy. This is the real Don Draper. Like, this is the easy.
No, this is 100%. Like, I really hope we end up getting at least some form of mini documentary thing on the fallout of this, like 5 years from now.
Yeah, I hope we get to know the truth. I'm not too hopeful we're finding that out today.
No, I'd
be shocked if he said anything of substance today. I'd be shocked if he took questions on this. I think it's going to have to come through the same way that we found out through incredible investigative journalism. I don't think Nez Bolello or Shohei Ohtani are going to be on the up and up with this if they don't have to.
But this is what I find so fascinating is you've said it. The cover-up is worse than the crime.
100%.
If you don't just come and outright say, I placed bets.
Yeah.
People are going to start to wonder why you didn't just say it.
Yeah. I don't know. Then are you saying like I don't want the perception of being the betting guy? Like, is it does
that's
that
just
fly?
It. Yeah, I don't know what the so that's the point of fascination to me today is I don't think a lot is going to get said, but it feels like the actual best way to do it is to be like we place some bets on sports legally.
God,
but it just again optically does feel strange, right? Like it doesn't feel right.
Should I feel bad that I have Schadenfreude for not like Shohei specifically, but like his team that have handled this so poorly? I'm like, this is
If you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan, you don't cheer for Shohei Ohtani. I don't think that's
the
case.
No, I know, but like I just think of the age in Nez Bolello, an incredible job getting $700 million. You hitched your wagon to a once in a generation superstar. The one job you have is to make sure something like this doesn't happen. And then when you get the opportunity to stop it in its tracks,
tough one, Nezzy.
Fumble the bag.
Yeah, tough one, Nez.
As badly as they did.
Yeah.
Like it makes me laugh because, what have you really done? Oh, you did an incredible job negotiating the once-in-a-generation superstar.
I might have
come close to 700 million. Oh, maybe I would have been like 690.
Yeah. Like, what would you have done less? Blind, going in there, no background, being like, we want the most money.
Yeah. And then, because that's all,
you keep saying more.
Well, and it's not like Cody Bellinger where it's like, oh, well, you're bidding against yourself. There were other teams that were like, oh, we'll do whatever it takes.
Here's what they're offering. From people. Oh, yeah. You're like, you read a tweet and you go, this is how much money that apparently he makes internationally. I read that today on Twitter. And the owner goes, damn it. Somebody get this guy's Twitter away from him. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. Let's do Jay season preview.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Final Jays spring game today at 1:00. I assume somewhere on Sportsnet.
Oh, yeah. It's in
Kevin
Gausman.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's not in Dunedin. Maybe it's not on TV.
I don't know. Either way, it's Kevin Gausman. Apparently, he's going to try to throw 55 pitches.
Yeah.
which if he does that, puts him basically on track to not even miss a start, which
he's not going to start opening day. It's like 32 instead of maybe like 33.
Yeah.
And I will take 60 pitches of Kevin Gausman, then like 40 or 50 of Mitch White.
Any day of the week. No, but it's you know, knock on wood, I guess, but positive story that he is moving in that direction and that you're not likely going to start the season without Kevin Gausman. Or if you do, that maybe it's a start or one that ends up getting pushed back. So that's good. Manoah will start the year in AAA.
It is on Sportsnet, by the way.
It is on Sportsnet. Nice.
Yeah. From Bradenton.
So, yeah, Romano, Swanson, both dinged up. Not the best way to start. But, again, nothing too major. The biggest injury of consequence ended up being Manoah. And he was supposed to be your fifth starter, and he ended up with having Bowden Francis, which when you and I did our predictions, we both thought, hey, there's a good chance Bowden Francis becomes the hype for this job, regardless of health, that Ricky Tiedemann emerges. And kind of both of those things ended up happening where Tiedemann showed out, ended up getting healthy, getting right. And Bowden Francis became what I think was the story of spring, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, as far as like somebody playing their way onto the team, Ernie Clement was pretty good.
Difference is though is that I don't think anybody was squinting and thinking Big Earn is going to be like a real needle mover for the organization.
Yeah,
the story of spring actually, if you were going to power rank them, would be one Joey Votto. Two Bowden Francis, Votto. Three Joey Votto. Ernie Clement,
and then Joey Votto, and then four maybe Bowden Francis.
Yeah, no, okay. So anyway. Yeah, Joey Votto hurt 40 and starting not on.
I mean,
let me just ask you this.
Okay, all right. Who feels like the more disingenuous purveyor of injury news? The Maple Leafs, when it comes to Mitch Marner being day to day out of the chute, or Joey Votto and the Blue Jays saying, like, oh, he rolled his ankle. Like, we got a day off tomorrow. He'll probably be back in there the day after.
Yeah. No comment.
Yeah, Mitch Marner, no big deal.
Yeah.
He's fine.
Yeah.
No big, it's going to be like 3 weeks.
Here's my question back to you of the Joey Votto thing.
Uh-huh.
Over under 0.5 games played for the Toronto Blue Jays, Joey Votto.
Now that Daniel Vogelbach is on the team, I have to take the under.
Yeah. Because Vogelbach being there, I thought was a significant... That Vogelbach gets $2 million guaranteed, and the Jays are in luxury tax, and so I just don't see how... They would have taken that money and put it on the major league roster if they thought Joey Votto had a shot to make the team. It would have been pretty obvious. They would have just put Lucas. So they'll never get it right.
Yeah, Lucas. Yeah. No, I need some clarity on the Vogelbach stuff because
I thought it was $2 million guaranteed.
No, but there is a potential in texting. And then Arden I had on the radio today asking him the exact same line of questioning, right? Like if it's $2 million and it's money in, money out, like in Vogelbach's performing, why, how does that work? There is something they can sign, like a letter of intent or some intent to like dissolve the contract after 45 days, mutual agreed destruction. So there is a way to have him on the major league roster.
Why would he sign that?
It depends on what you think of his. It depends
on. We're really educating the audience here.
No, it depends on what you think of his leverage because he's still Daniel Vogelbach.
They couldn't take that away from him.
Yeah.
The Jays were like, if you don't perform, you're no longer Daniel Vogelbach. He's like, who am I? They're like, that's for you to decide. That's for you to decide. But we will no longer, we own the rights to Daniel Vogelbach.
The most optimistic, he's only ever going to be Daniel Vogelbach, okay?
Yeah.
And everybody had their opportunity to sign Daniel Vogelbach to whatever they wanted. Yeah, okay. Guess what? Yeah. Nobody was like Daniel Vogelbach, but he performed well in spring.
Probably because they thought it would be a really weird story when they told him that he was no longer allowed to be Daniel Vogelbach.
Brandon Belt's still available. Like, Brandon Belt is actually Brandon Belt. He's not Daniel Vogelbach.
Trying to get him on the pod.
I think he doesn't want to mess with anything that's happening right now, is my guess, that he's not going to do anything.
I thought maybe once the season started and he didn't have a job, I could be like, hey.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, fingers crossed for
you. You really think that Justin Turner is for sure better than you?
No. Oh,
yeah.
I think it's, yeah. Given my druthers, who would I who would I have? Who would I rather have as the full-time DH?
Yeah.
Even though, oh, Justin Turner can play third base. He's not going to play third base, apparently. They've already decided like 10 times, maybe at most this season.
That was my favorite thing about the Justin Turner thing is people were like, man, this guy's a ball player. He's like a manager on the field. Yeah. He's like an old vet.
He's seen things. No, he's an old vet for sure.
No, but I was like, no, I'm just like, this is the like this is literally Brandon Belt.
Except he's right-handed and not as good.
That's
correct.
He doesn't hit as many home runs and he doesn't walk as much and he's right-handed. So he's not as good Brandon Belt. No, Brandon Belt's out there. So again, back to my
point.
People
did want to put him in prison because he had COVID and was outside one time.
No comment. Brandon Belt?
No. Justin Turner, remember?
Oh, right.
Shut the World Series down.
Oh, God.
I remember there were some people.
We might have had some regrettable takes.
No, I didn't. I was in the moment because some people wanted him to be suspended for a year.
Yeah, okay. I didn't have that take.
Yeah. My take was.
We were doing our show, What? I think we were like kind of had immediate takes. Were we both on the right side of history there?
Yes, we were because we said the same thing is that he found out in the middle of it and his teammates were like, yeah, we don't want you to go. Like, we're going to be all right. Anyway, whatever. This is stupid.
Okay. So. The point is, does Daniel Vogelbach have a lot of leverage? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So, like, if the Blue Jays are like, hey, you want to be a major leaguer for at least 45 days and maybe longer, sign this thing. And you can be on the major league roster. And if you don't, we're not going to guarantee you $2 million bucks because we can do the Nathan Lucas thing.
So then you still think Joey Votto Jays is a real possibility?
I think it was maybe not as much a possibility when he first signed the minor league deal because I thought, oh, man, this guy gets into spring games and there's still enough time. Like, how many games can he get into in 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what if he tears the cover off the ball? Like, do we discount that possibility? And, yeah, no, it looked pretty good at the outset. I think it's a possibility, but, yeah, it's lesser, obviously.
Okay. That's a lot of Joey Votto talk that more than I expected.
You didn't want to do more Joey Votto
talk? No, that's the end of Joey Votto talk. The reason why I was talking about the other guys and Manoah starting the year in the minor leagues is that we all agreed that was the biggest story of spring, was who was going to be the Jays' fifth starter.
Uh-huh.
What's the biggest story of the Jays' season?
What is the biggest story of the Jays' season?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a cop-out, but I think it's unequivocally true. It's like, what is Vlad? Like, Vlad, it's one guy. Because go back and run back the tape. Go watch the 162 games again. I double-dog dare you. You can watch it in double time. But, yeah, watch them back. How many wins do the Blue Jays have if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hits a home run at home before June, if he's the same guy on the road he is at home, if he's anything close to what he was in 2021? That's not an 89-win team. And if it's, okay, what, conservatively three wins, they're 92-win team, he looks like some better version of himself, and, you know, he's responsible for a home run, or God forbid, you know, I maybe not getting picked off second base in a postseason, like, he is everything. There's so many things that can go right or wrong over the course of 162 games for a baseball team, but for me, it comes down to one guy because I know it was one guy that was responsible for 89 wins, and the entirety of the disappointment from a season ago was him.
I think he's the head of the snake of the biggest storyline of the season, which is how much of the offense is positive or negative regression. And that's what this is going to come down to. Like,
can it be negative regression? It can't get any worse, can it?
Well, I do think so because
I mean, no, it can as a whole can get worse because they have Isaiah Kiner-Falefa as the full-time third baseman.
Yeah. Kiner-Falefa had an OPS plus last year of 78. Chapman was dreadful, but he finished with 108.
Yep.
Over the last three seasons, IKF has an OPS plus of 83 compared to Chapman's 108.
Yeah.
And in their careers, it's 81 to 117. And he's, by the way, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a glove man.
Yeah.
He's not as good at that as Matt Chapman is.
Correct. But you had to sign him to a two-year deal.
George Springer had a 732 OPS last year.
Yeah.
And he's 34 years old.
Yeah.
And if you look at his numbers, the fancy stats, they would actually indicate that was not a fluky thing, that there could be negative regression. And so, yes, I don't think that for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I agree with you. I think that he actually hit his floor last year. I don't think it's going to be any worse. Yeah. But what if he's around his floor is a nightmare for this team? You're right. He's the head of the snake of where are you going to improve in terms of your offense? We just said, is Justin Turner really going to end up being markedly better than Brandon Belt? Is there?
Oh, my God. If you could sign up for like 95% of Brandon Belt out of Justin Turner, you should sign on the dotted line.
I think that there are two major positive regression guys, and they are Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah. And we're starting to see the Kirk storyline now emerge. It's like, oh, yeah, full
off-season. Three. It's also Dalton Varsho.
Yeah, and we've heard that storyline as well. The Blue Jays, like, traveling to his house to talk to him about, being a better hitter.
They're like, you should hit it more. And he's like, I'll try. And you're like, don't try. Do it.
I love that. It's
No, but that's one thing. There seems to be some buzz anyways that the Jays' offense is going to be good. They were one of the least clutch offenses in all of baseball last year.
Mm-hmm.
And can they be normal?
The home road stuff makes no sense because it wasn't everybody. It was like Vlad and Varsho. Look at what Varsho hit on the road. Yeah. Like that's, if he just does that at home or what most people do, slightly better offensive player at home than he is on the road, we're talking about a different player altogether.
Yeah.
Same with Vlad.
So that's to me the story of the season is like Vladdy is the number one guy you need. I think Bo is Bo, and you're basically, we know what the floor is. You might get you're going to probably get like a guy who's a fringe MVP player, to be honest. Like that's what you're going to get at that position.
American League hits leader.
Exactly.
He would have done it for three straight years last year if he didn't get hurt at the end.
Bo is Bo, and you feel like he's going to squeeze as much as he can, right? Mm-hmm. From whatever he has, you don't feel like you're going to get cheated.
Yeah.
But to me, the story is positive regression. Does the offense go do they regress to normal?
Yeah.
Or do they actually go to good?
Yeah.
And like, what does that mean for them if they're just a good offense?
Well, this is, what's a great example of this? Yeah. It's like, Auston Matthews had the downturn in shooting percentage a season ago, and now he's shooting 20%, and that's unsustainable. Yeah. But you combine the 2 years, and it's actually like right in line with his career averages. So like, we like to do these samples as like one season, that's the regression. It's like, you can take a larger sample. But I do think, back to the question, and this, like, if we're going to magnify it, if we're going to crystallize it, I think it's Vlad, and I think it's, like, honestly, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro's credibility, it's their credibility on the line with one guy, because I do think it's one guy, but it's, I mean, you can't have the offseason that they had, and you can't be at this stage in this franchise's progression and do what they did or didn't do what they didn't do and have it, which don't look confused. That made sense. And then have it go pear-shaped because they can't score and everyone say, I was right, and then you still have your credibility.
Okay, so I didn't really follow all that. I'm not going to lie.
You can't.
No, don't try again. Just let me try. Don't try again. Don't do you? That was hard. That was hard on everyone. That was everybody. Let's all take a. Let's all take a second. All take a second.
You can't
keep trying
as they did.
Yeah,
and not be good.
Okay.
And rely on
every
the guys
it,
that
it
everybody
hurts my back of my brain. Like I feel it in my
everybody
brain.
Everybody said that this offense isn't good enough, and if it's not good enough, and everybody can say I told you so, and you staked your reputation on this team being good enough offensively, no one's going to believe you again.
Yeah, all right. The way I'm boiling it down, too, though, is you're wrong because if Vlad is awesome, the rest of the offense is bad.
Yeah, but that's not – I think it's impossible.
Oh, you think it's impossible for us the offense to be bad?
No, I think – if Vlad is good and Bo is Bo, which we all agree, like unless Bo is like, they just do a Freaky Friday thing where Bo is bad, but that's never happened throughout the course of his entire major league career, right?
This is a math thing. Bo cannot be bad.
Here's what I'll stake my reputation on. Well, Mark Shapiro is staking his reputation on Vlad being good this year. I'm not doing that, but I will tell you that if Vlad is good, if Vlad has a 900 OPS this year, the Blue Jays win 95 games.
Okay. Because I think that there is a scenario where around them it goes, Justin Turner's older, George Springer's older, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa doesn't hit, Kirk stays the same,
Jansen stays hurt. That's too many things.
But I'm just saying...
I don't think so.
It's just like some reasonable lines to draw from some of these guys.
I disagree.
So to me, I agree with you that it's Vlad. Vlad is clearly, again, the head of the snake, but to me it's just, it really is about finding out now, some of the other core pieces that you think you have to me in Varsho and Kirk, what are those guys over the course of another season? Mm-hmm. Because you can always swap out the Turners for belts and, that's whatever.
Or like Davis Schneider can be your DH. Like, that's or, it. You know, like Aurelvis Martinez, he doesn't have a position, but like he gets off the hot. Like, there's, you find DHs.
Yeah, so do those other
or Brandon core, Belt you sign.
Yeah, so do he's those other core pieces get better and regress positively? Can Vladdy get back to being special? And will Springer be able to at least just stall the aging curve that is starting to look really tough? Because those are basically the biggest questions I have for the offense. And the Kaiya Falefa thing is just, this is going to be a very interesting story because Robert Murray was writing about how all the executives in baseball love this signing. And I went, yeah, but I think that's more of a money thing than it is like a, he should be an everyday.
I didn't love the money thing either, though, and the multi-year commitment.
All I'm saying is that Robert Murray wrote it. He's a connected guy that a lot of the executives that
not
he talked
Canadian,
to.
Though.
What was it, Armin? He said that a lot of executives call it the signing of the offseason.
No.
Yes. Down. What? Bring it up. But find the article, Armin.
The signing of the offseason.
I'm just telling you what all was right. said.
Okay.
And there's...
Prove me wrong, IKF.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong.
I hope so. Okay,
I mean, I envisioned a scenario before they said that, hey, 40-year-old Justin Turner's, like, we're not putting his creaky mm-hmm. bones on the field. Where mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, you just... You can't score again, and you're like, oh, God, we got to do something here, and it's Justin Turner at third base and more Daniel Vogelbach or Joey Votto or whoever, DH.
Yeah, you can't. I don't know if you can do that. So last thing on the Vlad thing, over under 36.5 home runs.
Boy, I you know I'm the number one Vlad detractor, but
yeah,
like it can't be as bad as
like
it was a season ago.
Number
no.
one Vlad
yeah, over,
detractor.
Over.
Okay.
I over. And again, I'll stake my reputation on he plays – the whole
yeah.
season, like 150 plus games,
no.
and he has a 900 OPS. Blue Jays win 95 games.
Yeah, last two seasons, 32-26.
Yeah,
bumps.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's 26 is ridiculous for this guy.
I know
that's embarrassing.
Every time I got to tell you, it's funny. I've looked at it multiple times during the offseason to like refresh myself on how many home runs he hit. Every time I look at it, I always think, did he only play like 130 games? And it's like, no. He played all the games, essentially. Played 156.
Like, Dalton Varsho hit more than 20 last year.
Yeah.
How like, they were not that far disparate as far as total home runs a season ago.
And Dalton Varsho hit one of the bigger ones of the season.
Yeah, and Dalton Varsho was an abject disaster
yeah.
offensively.
Yeah.
And
no, Dalton Varsho had 20 bombs.
Yeah.
Six less than Vladdy.
Yeah.
And we said that was the worst.
He didn't hit one at Rogers Center until the end of June. The end of June.
It was a little late to be hitting a home run. And anyway, so over under 36.5, you're taking the over.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just a hedge for you, though. So be like, I'm just going to remind you that this
no,
is the position
you took.
No, I take
no pleasure in him not being what yeah. I thought he
no,
would
but
be.
No, I'm saying you think he's going to be very good this year because you're
I
taking
do.
The over 36.5, which would be
yeah.
Like more than 10 runs better than last year. More
yes.
More than 10 home runs better.
I think, yeah, like this is not the guy that we were promised. I do think he was a lot, like a lot of weirdness. If I'm going to mm-hmm. poster boy for the Blue Jays weirdness a season ago, it's him because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, launch angle. This guy's mm-hmm. such a worm burner.
Mm-hmm.
No, launch angle is fine. Like swinging outside of zone, maybe a little bit. But no, it's mostly home road splits, which mm-hmm. makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre, his season.
Is this the, yeah, is there any scenario, hold on. I'm trying to reframe this because I have it written down as, is this it for Atkins? But yeah, is this season is do or die for Ross Atkins? Yes. What is the bar he needs to clear for you to be like, you know, he's the GM next year? They need to win one playoff game, one playoff series. Like, how does it go?
Yeah, I mean, the playoffs are kind of a different animal. But, like,
yeah, no.
yeah compete atop the division, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility, especially considering the Yankees without Gerrit Cole. You know, it's weird. All the projection, like the nerd projections, don't have the Orioles being nearly as good this year
mm-hmm.
as a season ago. And they've got their own issues health-wise in the rotation.
Sure.
I think, yeah, winning the division, obviously, I think that would eliminate any of the postseason questions. Not entirely, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, once you win the American League East, especially going into this season where the Orioles, it's expected that this is just like the start of their dominance in that division. The Yankees go out and get Juan Soto. Yeah, I think winning the division takes him off the hot seat, but Ken Rosenthal had him as the GM most on the hot seat. Like this is, yeah, just the thought around Major League Baseball. We talked... During the offseason, especially the offseason he had, there's a realistic scenario where I thought he was gone before the start of the season. Yeah, they miss the playoffs or don't win 90 games again this year. And, I mean, that still might be enough to get into the playoffs. So, I mean, the opposite can be true. Like, if you have another 89-win season, but you win a couple of rounds, like, you get into the ALCS, mm-hmm. that could save his job. But, no, I can't imagine.
I think winning the division – or, sorry, yeah, winning the American League East and – it's hard to envision him not being a part of the organization moving forward.
Yeah, his relationship and the separating of him from Mark Shapiro is a confusing thing because Mark Shapiro's not going anywhere.
That's my thing is, it's just, yeah.
Like, is there a world in which Mark Shapiro says thanks but no thanks?
Yeah, I think there has to be. The only scenario where they win the American League is they win the American League East and they get swept again in the playoffs. I think you just need to, it would be so difficult optically to be like, you still haven't won one playoff round. Mm-hmm. Think about how mad people were last offseason. Mm-hmm. Just can't imagine what it would feel like if that happened again. It's crazy though, because, you know, why Vladdy is also the story of the season to tie into your thing is, that is what's going to get people excited, right? It's not going to matter if Kirk is amazing or Varsho's amazing. If Vladdy's amazing, people are going to want to go to the ballpark and see special Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, he is the
dude. Even if
the hope of everything.
Last year, if they win 89 games, but they do it on the strength of, man, the pitching kind of stinks, but they win games like 10-9.
But every game you go and Vladdy might hit a bomb. Oh, he's like playing like Aaron Judge. And
we're having a different conversation.
Yeah.
It's like, no offense to pitching and defense, which I love and people forget about oftentimes.
No,
but it's not
people
as fun.
Don't forget, because the baseball nerds are constantly beating us over the head with it.
Yeah, defense matters.
Yeah, the baseball
not
nerds.
Not this much.
The baseball nerds just won't stop shoving it in our face. Like, that was the whole Varsho thing. It's like, you said it. Varsho, the trade was horrific last year. Could not have gone worse. The guy they traded was hitting huge bombs in the World Series and looked incredible behind the plate. And people were like, you know, Varsho defensive run save. It was like, please shut up about this. For the love of God, I'm begging you. Just wait. Okay, who's the... Okay, I got two more quick ones for you.
Okay.
Because this is always fun. Who's the player that you're kind of sneaky excited for this year? Like, is there anybody on the team that you're like, you know what, I'm actually kind of excited to see this guy play? Who is it?
Davis Schneider.
Okay, bad choice, but okay, go on.
No, I think by the end of the season, he's your everyday second baseman.
Okay, nice.
I mean, Arden Zwelling's this morning told me, he's like, that's going to be the first guy option. Like, and I get it. Like, at the end of last year,
it's like,
okay, but look through his minor league track record.
Sure.
This is a guy, and also,
but the idea
I'm judging.
That he doesn't get jumped by Ernie Clement, even, is like, you know.
Yeah, no, that's outrageous. Like, have you actually paid attention to Ernie Clement's minor league career?
Yeah.
He hits for a high average, cannot walk, has no power.
Yeah.
He plays an important position. He's the backup shortstop. You need Ernie Clement if you're not going to have Santiago Espinal. But no, Davis Schneider has the potential to be a true plus offensive player at a position where there's no obvious answer at second base.
Yeah.
So he's competing with Kevin Biggio, who's, I guess it's going to be like a pure platoon, but, and we'll see how his defense plays in left field. I haven't seen enough of it to say whether he can stick there. But if you have Dalton Varsho doubts, then you should be on board with me that this guy can play two positions that are completely uncertain as far as the cemented options there.
No, am I rooting for it to happen? For sure. Is he the guy I'm most excited about? No. The guy I'm most excited about this year? Jose Berríos.
Okay.
I just think the stuff that he showed last year and the buzz around him cutting out of camp, this is going to be the big one for me. You know I believe opening day matters.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised that this is your take, because we were at his last opening day start.
And I think he figured something out. I think he...
a game that was, though, by the way. They
came it was back unbelievable. And it was, and the craziest part, I had a huge bet on the Blue Jays. And I was ruined.
You don't bet against the Blue Jays on the home opener.
No, I always put a heavy bet on the Jays on the home opener. I don't think it's gone very well for me, actually, historically. But
maybe
this,
you should.
No, this one was an all-time win where I already started to, you know, put back the Bud Lights, because I'm like, this game's over. The story is written. Basically, that's actually my version of, you know, when beat writers... go, we got to do a rewrite.
Yeah.
My version of that is I have too many Bud Lights at the game. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this is done. Nothing else matters. I don't need to pay attention. And then all of a sudden it's like, this game's important. I'm like, coffee, please.
Yeah. It's like they erase their whole document. You erase your brain.
Yeah. That's
Bud
it.
Lights.
I'm like, I got to watch this game later. I got to watch Jason 30 tomorrow morning. Boy, oh boy, I got to figure this out. I'm really excited to see what Berríos says this year and see if he can kind of carry over the momentum that he had.
He's good.
Yeah.
He started on opening days for the Minnesota Twins. He's finished top 10 in Cy Young award voting. I will say that, like, his best quality though is just never ending up on the IL.
Yeah,
right?
That's my thing though, is I wonder if he's got one special season in him and if this is going to be it.
Yeah.
Adam Cutter, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for the Berríos
last year
season.
Was pretty special, especially considering how much pressure was on him in year two. Like, that was the other thing about the opening day start was like year one of this 7-year extension kicking in. First start of the first full season as a member of the Blue Jays. He's like, worst start of my entire career.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good. Good
I
stuff.
Hated it.
I love the result though.
Okay.
10-8 win.
Last one.
Okay.
You and I are big stock guys.
Yeah.
We talk about our stocks every day.
Yeah.
You can pick anybody. And so you could have, you can't pick David Schneider again. So unfortunately, you already burned your answer on David Schneider.
Okay.
Who, and this again applies to, this doesn't have to be a regression guy. This is just a who is going to exceed expectations guy. Who are you buying stock in?
So, God,
I feel like there's only one answer for you.
It feels, I know. And that's why I'm like, everything feels so obvious with me. It's like you wrote these questions knowing the answer, right?
Well, I know you well, but I thought maybe you'd be creative, but I don't think you are.
I mean, there's only so many options.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but it's anybody. You could choose. You could have chosen Vladdy. You could have said, "I'm buying stock in Vladdy because he's
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm not doing that.
You could choose stock in Bowden Francis.
Who do you think I'm going to say? Because it's Alejandro Kirk. Yeah. It's Alejandro Kirk.
You have to choose Kirk.
Well,
you're pot
again,
committed. You're
like,
pot committed.
I know. And you jumped off the bandwagon.
No, but I actually think that he's going to have a good year.
Okay. Good.
But he's not my choice.
I'm so much process. That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, you make fun of my Votto love, but it's like the process of watching that guy go through an at bat and the close takes that he has and the idea that he has. And like Alejandro Kirk hasn't lost that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's Alejandro Kirk. Why? Who do you have?
I'd like to formally announce.
Oh, God.
In proper Zag fashion.
Oh, I know. Can I guess?
Yeah.
Dalton Barshow.
Correct.
Yeah.
I would like to announce that I am officially joining Chris Black in the I'm going to just be completely unapologetic about my shamelessness rooting for a take in Dalton Varsho. I'm joining Team Varsho.
You know, he's not trying to pop the ball up as much anymore.
Yeah.
He's trying to hit it on the ground.
Listen, I don't really love some of the stories because it feels very much like you and I always get nervous about whoever says they bought a pitch machine LASIK.
Yeah.
And I feel like his was kind of different variations of that with the visits.
Oh,
and
Kevin Pillar taking more walks was always my favorite. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to be more selective.
Yeah.
No, sure.
Yeah.
No, your entire professional hitting career isn't indicative of the player you are.
Here's what I truly do believe.
Forever.
Here's what I truly do believe.
What?
That this guy is, as they say, a ball player. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the defense because everybody can shut up about the defense. I really don't think I know he's the best at it or whatever in left field.
Most of his value came in center field.
I'm just saying, if you're going to be making the case about the defense, then I'm saying you could have gotten Bradley Zimmer.
Yeah.
And like that's to me is not that impressive.
Didn't have to trade Gabriel Moreno for Bradley Zimmer.
Do not care. Do not care at all about the defense. It's kind of expected for me if you're not going to hit anything that you make some outs.
Yeah.
I'm talking Dalton Varsho, actual offensive piece in the middle of the lineup-ish. You know what? He's going to hit sixth.
Well, it looks like he's going to hit fifth. Today he's hitting fourth, but it looks like
he's not hitting fourth.
No, because Justin Turner is hitting fourth. But
what's the deal though? Are they going to hit? Is there Bo hits cleanup stuff?
I mean, they've gone back and forth, but it does look like it's going to be Springer.
Blair about that tomorrow is like how
Bo,
real that is. Yeah,
Vlad.
They're like, let's go Turner. Back to what we had last year.
Also, they want the lefty behind Turner.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, like I said,
okay, so maybe he's five.
Dalton Varsho was bad. In an overall sense last year?
Yep.
Look at his home road splits.
Yeah,
I mean, if I'm going to talk about the Vlad weirdness,
this
it was him and Dalton Varsho had the weirdest splits. On the road, he was a 761 OPS guy, which, like, if that's who he is, playing that level of defense, you can live with it. He's 576 at home. He's ridiculous. He hit 182 at Rogers Center a season ago.
So I genuinely believe that he let the pressure get to him last year, and it really manifested at home. He's got to be better this year. He just can't be. That's why I'm taking him as the positive regression guy. He was so unbelievably horrific at the Rogers Center that I have to believe that this is a good choice. This is a good time to zag because it can't possibly be that bad again. Like it's got to be next near impossible for Dalton Varsho to have another year like this. So I'm taking the Dalton Varsho thing. I'm going to be a rider.
I like it.
I'm going to ride for Varsho.
Mm-hmm. 211 BABIP at home too. So that was unlucky.
Yeah. I wanted to root for the guy. That's all this thing. There's a lot of things I like about him. Please, Varsho, don't disappoint me.
He's a dirtbag. He's a guy that he doesn't finish a game without some dirt all over his uniform.
I know. Come on, man. Just do the damn thing. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. Tomorrow, Jeff Blair, Jackie Redmond. We'll see you then.